You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Do you love sci-fi, horror, and fantasy films? Then grab a badge for Otherworlds Film Festival, the country's premier sci-fi film festival. There'll be Q&As, panels, parties, and mixers. Rub elbows with up-and-coming and established filmmakers, as well as like-minded filmgoers. Come celebrate our 7th year, December 3rd through 6th, at the Galaxy Highland in Austin, Texas. Badges are now for sale at OtherworldsFilmFest.com. That's OtherworldsFilmFest.com.
I just kept thinking, you know, that there was an executive who's like, that guy is probably the nephew of somebody at the studio who wouldn't shut up. The only thing he had to add at every meeting about this movie is, I don't understand why we don't just call it Ghost House. And I was like, oh, shut up, dude. Jesus Christ. But that being said, this movie, which comes from a very highly thought of horror novel by Daniel Kellman under the same name, I believe, You Should Have Left. David Koepp, who's been in the industry for a very long time, more as a writer than a director, certainly, with, I would say, of the films he's directed, really only two films that are even worthy of mention, one of them being Stir of Echoes, which he did with Kevin Bacon many years ago, as this one is, and that's very highly thought of, and then the criminally underseen Premium Rush, which has no relevance here with this movie whatsoever, but you should go see it. And then he directed Mordecai, and everyone was like, go away.
I liked part of Mordecai. I don't like all of Mordecai.
Nobody liked Mordecai. What are you talking about?
I forgot that movie existed until this moment.
That was on, like, every critic's worst of the year list.
I didn't like the comedy. Every time they tried to be funny, it fell flat. But I liked the art caper plot of it and the way that moved.
But that film was a comedy, and if the humor doesn't work, then...
I like the throwback feature of it. It was great to see everybody working together, but I just think every joke fell flat, and I was like, dude.
I will never understand your beautiful mind.
It's misunderstood, don't worry.
That was Frank. Say hi, Frank.
Hello, I like Mordecai.
And don't be proud. Don't be proud. No one else is. In fact, if we ever have to put you in like a psychiatric institute, that's all we'll have to show them. And they'll be like, oh shit, this guy's serious. Put him in restraints.
I don't know why I just said that in front of you, because you already think my taste is shit anyways. Southland Tales, I mean, nothing but trouble.
It's not just shit, it's like mind-blowing shit, where it makes it fun to listen to it. So that's a big plus in my book.
I spin logic, that's why. Anyways.
You should go work for the Republican Party. Anyway. Sorry, also joining us, and now I feel bad for him, because he's like, I want to be part of this conversation too, is Adrian.
Hey, it's Adrian here. Go see Stir of Echoes, please.
Stir of Echoes is excellent. One of the things about that ghost story with, like we said, Kevin Bacon and also directed by David Koepp is that it was kind of ignored because it came out the same time as The Sixth Sense, which obviously dominated the conversation. And, like, you know, two ghost movies, it's a lot of similar elements. I think Stir Echoes is great. I don't personally think it even holds a candle to The Sixth Sense, but it is well worth revisiting, certainly. This is getting a lot of attention. First of all, it's Blumhouse, which is always a toss of the dice what you're going to get, but they're in a, I would give them about a 65% success rate from a critical point of view, which is pretty good for a company that releases mainly horror films.
I was looking at their filmography, like, to do Ma and then do like Whiplash, I mean, have that on your catalog at the same time, it's just like,
yeah, geez. And then Fantasy Island.
No, Truth or Dare was their low point. If you anyone had to sit through that mess,
You Should Have Left comes from, like I said, like, you got Koepp and Bacon together again, you got Amanda Seyfried, got that sort of arty ghost story feel all over it, which is like the art horror thing is a very obviously big deal right now with bigger audiences. I never thought I would have seen the day again. I mean, obviously in the 70s it was a thing, and then it just kind of disappeared up until just recently, where now people are like, whoa, it's the latest big art horror. This particular story follows Kevin Bacon's character. He's a screenwriter named Theo Conroy. I'm sorry, he's a banker. In the novel, he's a screenwriter, but he is a banker here who was very successful. But he's become even more famous because his wife died in what was considered suspicious circumstances. She took a bunch of pills and drowned in the bathtub, and he went on trial for it, and it was a big deal in all the papers, and he was found innocent by a jury. But of course, there's a lot of people who still are convinced that he did it. But he's always said he was innocent. And since he is remarried to Amanda Seyfried, which, yes, that's like a 26-year age difference. So right off the bat, and you can't not think about it. Because the first scene is him with a little girl. And then the next scene is him with Amanda Seyfried. And I was like, has a lot of time passed? And now that little girl's all grown up? That's his daughter, right?
The movie makes a point of bringing up the fact that there's an age difference.
Oh, a huge age difference.
Somebody on another Slack channel that I'm on, I mentioned that I watched this movie. And like, they're like, I can't get past the whole Kevin Bacon, Amanda Seyfried, like that 26-year age difference. And I'm like, no, it's actually, it's not Hollywood doing it this time. It actually has a function in the film.
It's relevant to the story, but largely to give the main character, Theo, more of a reason to feel suspicious of her for the possibility that she's cheating on him. But I don't honestly think you needed the age difference to do that. They've got a daughter together, Ella, who is just absolutely adorable, and his wife is an actress. When he goes to meet her on set, she's having a sex scene. They're like, we don't care who you are, you can't come on set, and being very dismissive towards him. It's very awkward. In fact, when they're leaving, it's clear he's uncomfortable, and she has sex with him just to be able to make the guy feel like he hasn't been emasculated by that. So they decide they need to get away from it all. They come across this secluded, very modern home in Wales, alone up on a hilltop. Beautiful, but sort of bare, super modern looking house. There's like literally nothing in it but the barest amount of furniture. All the pictures have been taken off the walls, long hallways. This place is just kind of cold. And slowly we start seeing psychological problems raised between Amanda Seyfried and Kevin Bacon. He starts becoming suspicious of her. His daughter is having experiences where she thinks she sees strange shadows. He keeps having these reoccurring, really fucked up nightmares. And then it turns out that maybe the nightmares aren't just nightmares, and the daughter isn't just seeing things, and maybe he does have reason to be suspicious of his wife. And this is the point where the film decides to go from not sure what type of film it is, looks like it's probably going to be some kind of ghost story, to a really shameless knockoff of Mark Z. Daniel Lewski's House of Leaves novel, which was this groundbreaking horror book about a guy who discovers his house is growing bigger on the inside, but not on the outside. I personally found this a real mixed bag of a film, but I want to hear what you guys think. Frank and I have been babbling at each other, so let's give Adrian a chance to say something here.
All right, for the next 30 minutes, it's just going to be me.
Well, I'm pouring myself a drink then. I don't care. Sorry, Chris.
I'll edit it down to 20 seconds, Frank. Don't worry.
This feels like Blumhouse's art horror movie. It feels like they want to go down the route of something that maybe A24 would do, but you could tell that the producers are like, you gotta throw in a jump scare like every 5 minutes. It's so mixed in what it wants to do, but I like the house. Pretty nice house.
It's a pretty interesting house. I wouldn't live there. I would go stay for the weekend, but I thought that was kind of cool.
Or forever.
It looks like if IKEA designed a haunted house, it looks like the Hauntoog.
There actually is a horror movie coming out based on a book about an IKEA, although not called that for legal reasons, that ends up getting haunted, basically, and people get trapped in it overnight, possibly forever. That's actually quite good.
And also, if anybody listening plays video games, it looks like a house that's made from the fucking Unity engine.
It's supposed to be cold. It's supposed to be sparse. It's very Spartan. It's modern, but in the way of the architecture from the outside, on the inside, it just looks like nobody's moved in yet.
Very UK. I lived in the UK, and that was very, I mean, I felt the coldness.
That was your house.
Sort of like, maybe I'd still be there if it was, but you know, I think they got the atmosphere of the house right. And off-putting, not quite welcoming environment that's beckoning you to come in anyways.
I mean, it served its purpose, but I don't think it becomes scary or truly interesting. I mean, I'm not going to compare it like a modern version of like the House of Usher or some shit like that, because it's not. It's just supposed to be cold and distant. But when it starts doing the thing where it's changing, then it starts to become sort of an entity in and of itself and creepier in that way. But like I said, everything that was happening once this gets into the third act, even down to like there's time shifting and time warping stuff. And I'm like, wow, Harry Potter already did this, you know, like this exact plot element that you did that doesn't even make sense in the context of the film. When you think about it, you're like, who would do that? There's a lot of stuff here that was just stolen from other better films. There's a lot of stuff in here that is just cheap jump scares. They're really, that's what I'm saying. It's like not an art director. This guy doesn't know how to make a film from a thinking script that makes you think. He knows how to make a commercial film, and that's all he knows how to make. That's all he's ever made. And this feels like a guy who did not have any idea how to do anything interesting with an interesting script.
I think I'm finally realizing why I liked this and you guys didn't. Well, A, I didn't see this as an art film.
It's not. That's what we're saying. It's not an art film. It's written like one, though.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's written as sort of very purposely very pulpy and very sort of not schlocky, but almost like something like William Castle would have directed this. I can see, you know, back in the day.
I disagree.
I don't really think that they were going for anything artistic. And also, I didn't really look at it as a horror film. I didn't come at it from a horror perspective. I came at it from more of a, that's what you guys are saying, jump scares. Like, there, I was like, there are jump scares? Really?
Wait, which movie did you watch, Frank? Was there a movie just called You Shouldn't Have Left that you accidentally watched instead?
I'm still watching it right now. I can't leave. Maybe I've just seen too many jump scares that they just wash over me now, but they just didn't register for me. I saw this more as a psychological thriller about a man trying to outrun his past that he can't. It took me a little while because I'm not that bright.
You're insane, but you're bright.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll take both. Gladly. The younger wife thing is, you know, this is his second chance, and he fought so hard to have a second chance, and now, you know, the darkness and fate, whatever you want to call it, is saying, you don't get to have your second chance. You have to atone. You're going to atone for life. There was nothing in there that really told me I needed to be, that I was supposed to be scared.
Which is bad, because it's supposed to be scary, and it's not.
Yeah, no, and I mean, in terms of it being art horror, I mean, I think you're misunderstanding me. I don't think this is an art horror flick. I can tell you for sure it was written as one, because that's how every critic described the book it's based on, as really deep, really innovative, artistic horror. And this took the most basic idea of what happened in the book and made a super generic horror film out of it.
Well, I haven't read the book, so I can compare the quality between the two, but
I have not either, but I'm just going by critic reviews.
Yeah, listen to us.
I'm telling you this about a book I haven't read. Well, I'm telling you this about a book I haven't read. Shut up, the both of you. I'll kill you all.
I really appreciate this because it was pretty accessible. The two main criticisms people are going to make is that A, the main character is unlikable, and B, this should have been a Black Mirror episode. I love the fact that this was so self-contained, that this was singular, but it also very accessible. It didn't try to be anything it really wasn't. I found that really refreshing. That's what I love about Blumhouse, is they can just be sort of fun and sort of throwback, but also, you know, feel like it's its own flavor at the same time. I thought this did that.
You thought this was fun?
I thought it was fun, yeah. I watched it twice.
It was so glum.
I always feel like I should have been born to the Addams Family at some point too, Chris, but don't mind.
That's fair.
I really didn't care, is essentially what this movie came down to for me. I didn't care enough about the plot. At first it was like, oh, I kind of wonder where this is going. I think I have an idea. And then it even felt at one point convoluted in a almost nostalgic way, like a bad 90s horror movie that's like, wait a minute, what are they trying to do exactly? You kind of figure it out like almost at the end where it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course it's going this direction, because why wouldn't it? It's not really doing anything too crazy, but for me, it just comes down to, I like the house. I think it has good atmosphere, and atmosphere for me goes a long way, but not long enough.
Why don't we go into final thoughts on Adrian? Is that it feels like you're holding back. So don't hold back. Go into final thoughts.
This movie is too bad to be good, but it's not too bad to not be watchable. I did find enjoyment in this. Some of the jump scares are so bad that they're kind of funny. That's what makes them bad jump scares. They were so ineffective that you just completely forgot that they were even in there. There's even some like half done scares where one character's reflection isn't looking the same way that they should, and
that was the scare.
Like, that goes really nowhere until the very end, and even then it's kind of silly.
Wait, Frank, you thought that was supposed to be like a psychological statement on what was going on inside his head instead of a scary horror movie thing?
No, I just thought it was like a little piece of flair. I thought, oh, that's neat. That's a good
shot. Well, yeah, it's supposed to be spooky flair. It's like, oh, he's looking into the mirror. He looks away and the mirror is still looking at him. Oh my God, we've never seen that before.
I don't know. I didn't go into this movie expecting to be scared, and I wasn't like disappointed that I wasn't. So, I don't know.
All right, back to
Adrian. I don't know if I was expecting to be scared, but I was expecting a horror movie, and I don't think this was that. This felt like a really poorly written Twilight Zone episode. I like Kevin Bacon. He's kind of charming. There is a side character that you can kind of tell exactly who this character is supposed to be, And that was, like, so silly to me that it was kind of funny. I'm liking this movie for, like, the wrong reasons. It's not that good, but you might get a kick out of it if you like Blumhouse horror movies, and especially if you want to see Blumhouse fail at making an art horror movie because they don't really know what to do. Check it out. It's entertaining enough. I give this 2.5 Shadow People out of 5.
Okay, Frank, it's your turn, but no reiterating. You have to say all new stuff.
This isn't an art movie.
You already said that.
No, it wasn't intended to be. So it was never intended to be an art movie, I feel. Blumhouse can try harder if they want to do something artful. Maybe I think I'm the one that really sort of just got what they were going for, although that's sort of presumptuous to say because I don't want to speak for filmmakers, but I liked it. I like the atmosphere. I think this movie has a really, really great sense of place. I love the isolation factor. I like that these are two flawed characters, but that drives me so nuts when someone says, oh, I didn't like them well enough. It's like, well, I don't know. Sorry, Julia Roberts made a lot of shitty movies, and you know, and she was likable in all of them, so I don't know what you're talking about. I love it when characters aren't perfect, when they're, you know, so obviously flawed. And I love that the movie lives in their sea of flaws. And this movie did that. I liked the whole labyrinth aspect of the house. I thought it was intriguing. I thought it was done so subtly, and I really appreciated that. I hate being like hit over the head with jump scares and with so obvious like shock moments. Oh, this was fun. It was accessible. I really wish that this had come out in January. This is a kind of a January genre piece that I actually kind of dig. I liked, once the twist is revealed, it becomes a little bit more poetic in the end. It's about atonement and the choices you make and redemption. And also, I love Kevin Bacon. I think that guy's a treasure.
And this is his first film since 2016.
Since Cop Car? Was that the last one that
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
See, and that's like breaks my heart because this guy is like clearly, as an actor, he's still engaged. He's still interested. He's still committed. He still gives it his all.
He still looks a lot younger than he is, too.
He bless his heart. Dude's like in his 60s. I like this. This isn't an art film. This isn't a horror film. It's a psychological thriller William Castle could have made. I think its audience will know that. They'll get it. Until then, I got to give this 7 out of 10 times that I was treated very rudely as an American living in the UK by shopkeepers.
I hear that's a thing.
I thought I was going to be treated rudely by Chris.
I know, no. I thought so too. But I always apologize, Chris. God. Nah, I'm just kidding. I love that guy.
Yeah, I know. They didn't apologize. They didn't say they love me.
So to start off my review, I'd like to say every single thing Frank just said was completely wrong. I disagree entirely. I'm just kidding, man. You know I love you. But seriously, you were wrong. I don't think this was supposed to be an art film. I think it's not an art film, and that's the problem with it. There is enough interesting stuff in the structure of this to make it into something much better than what we have here, which is a really not a thinking person's horror film, but with a lot of stuff that's going to be confusing to people who prefer these types of films, I suspect. When I go down David Koepp's list of films, which is sizable, that he's written or directed, mostly written, he's written one or two really good films and scads of mediocre Hollywood churned out stuff. Just scads of it. And this is more of that. It's not terrible, but it's Hollywood churned out stuff for people who have a hard time even with the really good big Hollywood films. They're gonna hate this fucking thing. This is thoroughly mediocre, and it's a shame because, like I said, there is obviously enough pieces there, enough things, casting, the house itself, the setting, that could have made a really great horror film, and it is a horror film, Frank. I'm sorry.
It's
really just these broadly drawn characters we get the idea, right? And then they don't really do anything interesting with them. It goes exactly where you expect it to, both in the character-driven way and in the horror movie way. And despite the fact that it's occasionally quite pretty to look at, and it's definitely decidedly very competently made. I mean, this guy's made God knows how many movies. He knows how to make a movie that looks like a Hollywood film. And this looks like a Hollywood film. That's not always a good thing. I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 times. I was like, you know, I kind of want to get high and take a bath.
5 years from now, Criterion's going to be getting all these letters from Frank saying, like, hey, are you guys going to put Mordecai and you should have never...
Mordecai.
You should not let, because I will do the commentary. I will host the round table.
You're only allowed to do that if I'm doing the commentary with you, so I can make sure that everyone understands that you're wrong.